You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Welcome to I'm Listening. This is a Frasier fan podcast hosted by number one Frasier fan, me, Anita Flores. Each episode, I have a special guest, and today is no different. Today, we have writer and creator of the upcoming animated series, You're Not a Monster, Mr. Frank Lesser. Frank, how are you today?
Oh, I'm doing very well. You know what? Normally, I just casually say I'm good.
Oh, you're good.
But then I know, but some people are like, oh, I'm well. And then you're like, yeah, I know that, but that just sounds like weird.
I mean, I think it's just a big lie anyway. I don't think anyone, I mean, I guess you're okay, but like everyone's got something going on.
Yeah.
And you just have to be polite and say, yeah, I'm fine. Yeah.
I'm well. Okay is okay.
I might try well.
Yeah.
Just because it sounds like, okay. Frasier-esque. Mm-hmm. He never says I'm okay.
I'd be more on it. I'd just be like marginal.
Sure. So this is the first time that I, listeners, am seeing Mr. Frank, I'm calling you Mr. Frank Lesser, Frank, because I met you, Frank, because I interned at the Colbert Report 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I have not seen you in 9 years. Do you think that I have aged well?
I think you're very similar.
Oh, that's good.
I think, you know, in modern healthcare society.
It's harder for women.
Oh, really? Okay.
You want to hear. It's like you're a man. You can just grow gray in your beard. And
no, I could imagine you like shadowing one of the writers at this moment. Right. This might be what it is. Because at the Colbert Report, and I think at the Late Show as well, they let the intern shadow different people. And it's always a really nice thing. And you had shadowed my wonderful office mate, Mike Brum.
Yes.
I'm still deeply hurt that you did not shadow me at the time. But I'm going to count this as like a shadowing experience.
This is a shadowing experience. This is me shadowing you 9 years later.
Yeah.
But let me ask you, because you've seen so many interns over your career, probably hundreds, maybe mm-hmm. thousands. Would you say you could have predicted, like, do you ever, there were so many people, there were like 15 of us 9 years ago. Would you ever see anyone and think, you know what, that kid's going to do something special? Did you think, you know what, Anita's going to do a podcast about Frasier?
Yeah, I don't think I would have guessed that at the, I mean, maybe at the
me neither.
Time. It is a very interesting thing. Well, I mean, I do think that there's a popularity of it all due to streaming. So I did
That's
not
true.
9 years ago predict yeah. Netflix and all the streaming of the
sure.
popular mid-late 90s sitcoms. Would not have necessarily guessed Frasier, someone who was in college
so young.
At that point. Yeah, but it is, I think, an interesting show that does, have a life beyond watching it at the time, and that, you know, still really does hold up a lot. So
thanks
it's very interesting. Yeah, exactly. But it is still like a show that, and it's also interesting because you watched it. And I always, when I was younger, because I was I think I was watching it when I was in middle school and late high school mm-hmm. when it was originally airing, but I just kind of thought, oh, this man is so old and so much, you know, more sophisticated mm-hmm. and like, you know, he's an adult and everything. And now I think at this point I'm watching it and I still think that, but I'm actually probably a year or two older than Kelsey Grammer was when he was actually in Frasier. Because when he started in Cheers, he was like in his late
20s. Yeah.
And he just seemed much more mature and adult. And that was also the character that was sort of being written there. But maybe if people said of all the interns, which one would someday be hosting a Frasier podcast? Yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
I mean, there is a podcast for everything. But I thought I wouldn't even have this podcast if Frasier hadn't come back or hadn't, like, I was watching it when I was growing up. I watched it in syndication, but if it hadn't been for Netflix, I don't mm-hmm. think so. If Netflix wants to sponsor this podcast, please do.
Yeah. Or I think a live version of this show on Netflix.
Ooh.
Go for that. Set your sights higher. That if you learn anything from me from your internship, it should be go for the ridiculous thing that might not happen. So then you'll always be disappointed in life.
I think that's a great motto. I think something I learned from shadowing both of you, I would say, you and Mike, is the it's very stressful, the thought of you guys in a small room having to come up with ideas so quickly. That's mm-hmm. that's the thing that I really admire about people that write in TV, especially for a show like The Colbert Report, where you've got these very tight deadlines. And then also a lot of the stuff that you write gets like completely changed around at mm-hmm. some point in the day and just in this tiny room. Like I remember being in the room with you guys and just you didn't seem that stressed. Or maybe you like the stress. Maybe that also that's part of it, is perhaps there's something thrilling about just knowing you have to.
I think a
hurry
little
up.
Bit. A lot of the writers and Colbert himself had a very heavy improv background. Oh, so nice. I think there was that sort of delightful, like, oh, you find something in the moment. Me, I have zero improv background. I find it stressful and horrifying. So there was definitely an adjustment period starting there where you then are plopped into something and, oh, it's this pitch. And, oh, they like this joke the last two times they read it, but now it feels a little old. And that was only all in one day. And you have to come up with something else. And it was a very good learning experience. But the first 3 months of the show, I don't think I could write emails to people because I was so like overstressed and sort of writing everything. One thing before I forget that I was just thinking of when you were talking about, oh, would you have thought that I would have a Frasier podcast? Again, it's like, no, because I would not have, you know, expected it. It's like a really interesting thing. But then I was thinking like, oh, but if anyone who was a fan of any late night show of any sort was going to also have a Frasier podcast, I think it would be somebody who was either a fan of or had interned on The Colbert Report or even The Late Show. I would say Colbert is the Frasier of late night shows. And maybe that's not exactly true because, you know,
like
if you look
that.
At the big top three 90s sitcoms that people still watch today, it's primarily Seinfeld, Friends, and Frasier.
Yes.
And they all had varying different levels of how popular they were at their peak or anything. Mm-hmm. But I think Colbert is very, you know, is a very intellectual show. I think Frasier was a very intellectual sitcom. And still, you know, watching it today, you're like, oh, this is really funny. It would be interesting to see what it would have been like in a single cam, you know, if it had come out a little bit later or if it was, I don't think you really want to see the FX version of it or anything. But
it'd be pretty dark, I think. But I could definitely see Stephen Colbert as a character being a really good arch nemesis for Frasier. And separately, what I was going to say is I remember the first guest my first day at Colbert, which was Joe Biden. And then my last day or when I was, you know, part of the internship was to like greet guests. And the last one was Amy Sedaris. Did you write on her new show?
Yes. Yeah. I worked on a bit of the first season,
well,
which was a lot of fun.
Which is great because I'm a big Amy Sedaris fan. But I also thought she would have been, because Frasier dates a lot of women over the course of the show. And just a lot of actresses like that I didn't think about until I started rewatching it, like Allison Janney, Rosie Perez. I think that Amy Sedaris could have been a really good like blind date gone mm-hmm. wrong. Not because she I love her and she's charming, but Frasier definitely clashes with strong women.
Right. Yeah. Well, that was the even going back to Diane, I would think. But I mean, I think Lilith is the key big one. And I think even mm-hmm. I was watching some of the early episodes where he was having sort of the workplace affair with the head of the
right.
for Mercedes Costas. Rule. And she was really, and she, and like, you're like, oh, it's funny. They, oh, she, he has a type, I would say.
Yes.
Well, one thing that I will say is Amy Sedaris is voicing a character on You're Not a Monster, the short form animated series coming out in October on imdb.com.
We're going to talk at great length about your show. I'm very excited. But first we have to get to the most important topic, which is Frasier.
Yes.
Because I would only ask somebody on here who I knew, and I had an inkling because I saw, I mean, I follow you on Twitter, and I knew you had this show coming out, but I just found it, I just had a feeling that you had probably watched Frasier because I was so blown away by, like, two of my favorite people are voices on the show, or like actors, comedians, you know, masters of their field, which Kelsey Grammer as a bat, I believe, and Aparna Narchela. Yeah, I found it pretty hard to believe that if you had Kelsey Grammer on your new show, that you, I figured you were probably a Frasier fan.
Oh, yes, definitely.
So, and so then I immediately thought I needed to contact you. So I am curious, what is your history? Well, you said you watched Frasier in middle school. So is that when it started for you? Like, when did you start watching Frasier?
Yeah, I would say, I think it was, it's the very first season. And I mean, so it came out, I think, in 93. I looked that up. So I would have been 13. So I think that would have been peak awkwardness. I think that was the year of my bar mitzvah.
Oh,
which,
it's awkward.
I have never watched the video of that. I know this isn't about me and my bar mitzvah, so I'm going to move on. I'm going to move back to the Frasier thing. But I was just, you know, you're in an awkward phase in your life, and I didn't really like sports or really, you know, I was into movies. I was into mostly film and not even as much television. I had watched little bits of Cheers before that, but I primarily watched like after school Disney cartoons, like Gummy Bears, DuckTales,
sure,
those types of things. I think I had watched some sitcoms, and I think my mom was like, oh, I think you'll like this show. And, you know, I remember watching that with my mom and a little bit with my dad. He wasn't as into watching sitcoms. For whatever reason, he liked to watch late night television, which was never even anything that I even watched at that point. Now I'm just going into psychoanalysis. You should actually have a couch in here for your guests, and you should have like one moment where you do just have like the psychoanalysis, and you can do your best sort of armchair.
I'm not a Freud gal, so I never agreed with Frasier about that. And I was a psych major for 2 years, not to brag. But
oh, interesting.
Of course. Ah. Well, you know, I used to think that that was like a really special, unique thing. And then come to find out a lot of people start out as psych majors. I don't necessarily know why.
Did you have weird thoughts and you thought, if I study this, I'll know why I have these thoughts? That's what I always, that's my like sort of stereotype of psych majors.
Part of me thinks it was because like I was never a good student, but I would say I did take AP Psych senior year of high school, and it was the class I did the best in. I thought, okay, let's start here. And then the math and science part really bummed me out. That's why I had to get out of there. I'm not a math and science gal either.
I wasn't either. I was good at it up until, I forget, I don't even remember what it's called anymore. It wasn't trigonometry. It's whatever the thing that you're learning in like 11th grade. Yeah, I think it might have been calculus. It was something where then I was like, oh, this all of a sudden stopped making sense. And then I just took the regular non-honors class and was like, this is a lot of fun because it was fairly
psych
easy at the time. No, just math.
Oh,
just math. We didn't have a psychology class in high school. That's maybe like a useful thing. We still had, at least in middle school, we had home ec, but the teacher insisted on calling it human ecology. Because she thought home ec was like a weird sort of retrograde phrase. And then we had shop, which the shop teacher was fine calling shop. And then the rumor was he had served in Vietnam, and like, so people would try to get him to have flat. Like, it was a horrible, like, these were like horrible high school. I did not do any of that or anything.
Thank goodness.
But these were, and then we had a music class, and the teacher had us sing Everybody Wang Chung Tonight. Because this was in the early 90s again.
I mean, I think the home ec thing's interesting. My home ec was not called home ec. It was called foods. Foods, as in, so there was like foods one, foods two, foods three, and foods four. And foods four was like the highest level you could get to. It was a whole con job, though, because foods before, we were cooks, but we were providing a special service for the teachers where we would make them sandwiches and they would order sandwiches and we would make them. And weirdly, we didn't get paid for it.
The class was always like right before lunch. It was a really weird timing of everything. Well, I think the psychology class would be interesting and you could get people into it by showing Frasier. I'm just trying to get back to the I'm worried that we'll read comments and people will be like, why is this idiot? You had this jerk on and he's just talking about middle school. But again, going into a sort of psychoanalytical point of view, if I'm talking about Frasier and it's wrapped up in my adolescence and pre-adolescence, this would be a key part of it. And I was about to start to make things up and say, I actually modeled my, relationships towards people on Frasier, but that's not the case or anything.
Don't do that.
No, exactly. Yeah, it's very funny to watch it because you are like, when you think back on it, you're like, oh, right, he's like this very pretentious, sophisticate who is, into fine wine. But then you're like, oh, he's like constantly dating women and
he dates a lot of women. I have done a whole episode on this show about Frasier and the women. I think it's actually called that because he dates at least three models, which is, it's funny. I mean, that's just sitcom world for you. Mm-hmm. It works out very well for the men, I will say that.
Yes, yeah. But I think it was also, I think they were usually well-written characters or interesting characters, or Lilith was always funny when she would come back. And again, the station manager character was a very fun, funny, strong woman.
Yeah. It'd be great if somehow they get him back together in this possible revival. I'd love to get her into the mix.
Oh, yeah.
So do you have a favorite character on Frasier?
I would say, well, if I think back to middle school, I mean, I definitely loved Frasier.
Sure.
I mean, it's not Frasier without Frasier. I loved Niles.
Yeah.
Like, Niles is very funny, and
he's
watching some of
favorite.
The early episodes. Well, he's like a wonderful physical comedian.
Yeah.
You watch it, if it's on mute, it's like watching Buster Keaton or Harold Lloyd, probably, as more of a resemblance to, I'm sure some of the Frasier fans out there will also appreciate references to obscure silent film star Harold Lloyd with the glasses and he's falling off the clock. He's holding on the clock face, the clock hands.
Hear
that's
that,
like his famous.
I'm sure that many of you do know. I do not.
Okay.
I mean, I have a very random sort of back history of certain network TV, and that has to everything to do with my mom, because a lot of people I know that started watching Frasier have the same story as you and I, where it was like my mom was watching it or my dad or an older relative. Like, I oddly, when I met John Hodgman, who was on this show, I always tend to impress people that are older than me by telling them I watched St. Elsewhere because my mom would tape it. Remember videotapes? That's
those
right.
Those are all really
retro.
Nice.
Yeah.
I don't want to plug my show again, but there are some videotape references when the girl from The Ring is in therapy.
Ooh.
So she's there.
Well, let me ask you one more Frasier question. Well, it's all Frasier related.
Oh, yeah.
You'll see. But I am curious. Is there anyone in this possible revival for Frasier? Any people, famous people, any actors that you think would be great guest actors?
Well, I think you had a good point when you said that Stephen Colbert would have been very funny to, be on it, even just as another. I don't know if in any revival, if any of the pitches are what they're looking at, if he still has the radio show. Maybe there's a little podcast character.
Maybe there's a
fan of Frasier's therapy advice podcast who's in it.
Yeah.
But having Colbert as another, competing host, or even just different, maybe not like Bulldog, but just some other radio show host that's dominating the ratings. But I don't know that they'd be keeping with the radio.
Well, I like the idea of a radio arch nemesis because I'm sure this won't surprise you. I've talked about to other guests about what they think should be in this revival, and none of us have spoken of a possible rival because he has a rival on the show, not a radio rival, named Cam Winston, who lives in the apartment above him, and he's this very handsome, like also has a really beautiful voice. I'd say better looking too. No offense to Frasier Crane specifically, but I think they cast this actor because he's like, he was Black Frasier essentially.
He was
like the same character. He had the same apartment and he was great. But I think that Stephen Colbert would make a great, great nemesis.
Mm-hmm.
But on that note, I do want to talk about your new show, which I think has a great premise. And also, definitely ties back to Frasier because it is about a therapist who sees monsters. Or you tell us about it.
Oh, yeah.
What is the premise?
Well, so the idea is it's a therapist whose patients really are the horrifying monsters that they think they are because mm-hmm. they really are horrifying monsters.
Right.
And it's called You're Not a Monster. And the main character is voiced by Eric Stone Street, who plays Cam on Modern Family. Mm-hmm. And he ended up inheriting the practice from his great-great-great-grandfather, who was a vampire and a therapist who was retiring, and that's Kelsey Grammer. So there's a lot of back and forth, whereas Eric's character Max is struggling with how to help these monsters, Kelsey's character John Seward shows up to sort of give advice, and occasionally it's good advice, and in other points it's not good advice, but either way he still thinks it's good advice because he is a, you know, he's not 100% at all based on Frasier, but obviously if you're sort of writing a character like that, and when Kelsey Grammer is voicing it, you're going a little bit in that sort of direction. And this will be, if there's any overlap of Frasier fans and Bram Stoker fans, the character is actually John Seward in Bram Stoker's original novel Dracula, and in most of the adaptations, there is a psychiatrist who runs the asylum that Renfield is committed to. And that character is John Seward. So there'll be a whole little bit of backstory where, you find out, this is the character from Dracula. There's also one tiny bit of backstory that I don't think I've run this past Kelsey yet, and I wouldn't necessarily put it in the show.
Sure.
Unless he was completely okay with the joke, but I wanted to have a reference where at some point John Seward, this is all taking place in New York, but he's talking about, there were points in the past where he tried to hypnotize everybody around him and just pass himself off as a normal human. And he did it, he tried it once in Boston in the 80s and another time in Seattle in the 90s. So the show is actually the official follow-up to Cheers and Frasier, in my mind.
In your mind.
But I don't think we can actually put that on the show without getting everybody on board with it. And it wouldn't be the actual thing, but it's just a quick little throwaway joke.
I mean, we could also say that this is Frank's opinion.
Yes.
You can't get in trouble for that.
No, exactly.
Can you? If you say this was only endorsed by Frank, Mr. Frank Lesser. But I think it's a great premise. And so I'm very curious about what inspired you to come up with this premise. I mean, did you like animation growing up? Did you like horror growing up? Both?
Well, so that was when I was thinking, when you were asking, how did you get into Frasier? I think it does sort of almost relate back to that. Maybe not in an actual conscious, obvious, clear, intentional way on my part, but I was watching all of the Disney after school cartoons. I think I would get psychosomatic stomach aches and not go to school. I went to the school I didn't really like up through about fifth grade. So I'd come home early from school and I'd be able to catch the Gummy Bears would start at 2:30.
It's called the Gummy Bears?
So I'm surprised nobody's done anything.
The Care Bears.
There were the Care Bears, but that was more early 80s, not Disney, I don't think. And then the Gummy Bears were these bears that lived in some medieval forest in vague Europe. And they would get the gummy berries that grew there, and they turned it into juice, and then they would drink the juice, and it would kind of give them superpowers, and they could bounce everywhere.
Oh, my gosh.
I think that's why it's sort of loosely based on actual gummy bears, the treats.
What channel
G-U-M-M-I. I think
G-U-M-M-I. It sounds European.
Yeah, it might have been. I'm not sure if they had dubbed it over, but it was definitely released by Disney. It had a wonderful theme song that you can go on YouTube and listen to it in other weird, not weird languages. I'm just insulting every language that's not English, but you can hear the German
English
version
weird
of it.
Too.
They're all, language is weird. People are weird.
I agree.
But this was a good show. And then right after it, DuckTales would be on and there'd be all these other things. So I was watching those. And then I think as I sort of matured in my tastes a little bit, or was watching more actual TV or things more for adults, one of the first things was Frasier. That was one of the first definitely network sitcoms that I was sort of watching. I don't know what else. What I would do otherwise is you'd then turn on Nickelodeon, and then after about 5 p.m. or so, Nick at Night would come on, and you'd watch. So growing up, I weirdly watched Mr. Ed and Car 54, Where Are You? And I think if I ever talk to people in a nursing home, I can really relate to them by being what about that Mr. Ed, where they're trying to chase down a Russian spy, which actually was one of the plots of one of the Mr. Eds. So it was weird going from cartoons to very old sitcoms mm-hmm. to what's now considered a more classic sitcom, but at the time was like the show to be watching, essentially. Mm-hmm. So watching Seinfeld, I started watching Seinfeld around the second season before it had really, or maybe even the first when they were still moving it around a little bit. And then, you know, it really was must-see TV. Maybe you're not as familiar with that particular phrase, but it was that was a wonderful period of time. We had to watch it. I don't think you remember what life was like in the 90s. It was mandatory.
Right. No, I'm not going to pretend that I have I definitely remember watching these shows as a kid because I didn't have cable. So this is what I watched. I did get to experience must-see TV, but yeah, I would say I probably didn't understand just how popular it was back
right.
then.
Well, if you don't have cable, every channel is must-see
That's
TV.
That's right, exactly.
There's really no other choice.
And for me, it's the ones that come in the best. I mean, if you're a non-cable kid, you know that some channels didn't come in, including ABC. So I wasn't as familiar with, what was it, TGIF?
Right.
I couldn't watch Step by Step as
much. I was never
into
TGIF. Step by Step I liked. Never liked Full House.
I mean, I tried to. I also never watched Full House. So it's really weird when you go back and watch these revivals. Like, I started watching a new episode of Full House on Netflix, and it really felt like watching Adult Swim because, like, these references meant nothing to me. And then they get, like, a round of applause. And I was like, I don't know what's going on. It just made me think of Too Many Cooks. But anyway,
right. Well, I always wanted to do a show that was a revival of a fake sitcom that had never actually existed in the 80s or 90s. Great. I was going to call it, like, Old Glory Returns. It was going to be based on, like, a major dad type thing. I've soft pitched it to a couple producers, but nobody seemed that interested. So if any listeners want to steal this idea, you can probably take that one. I think that would be okay. Wait, very quickly. This is a complete side tangent, but sort of related to shows from the 80s, 90s, early 2000s. My favorite Full House sort of story is the fact that the guy that created it bought the Sharon Tate murder house.
What?
He's the owner, and they tore it down and they built a new house.
Oh,
but that's the person who owns that. You know, this is topical because of the Tarantino film right now,
and
everybody's interest in weird murderers these days.
It's true. I am too.
And cults.
Honestly.
Yeah, it's like kind of an interesting thing. I feel a little bad because I'm like, I don't want to be the cool kid who was like, I was into murders back in like
you were
the,
into murders
back
and
in
cults.
Middle school, exactly.
Right.
And now all of a sudden, it's like this huge popular thing and. All the weird goth kids have to be like, okay, whatever, I'm going to wear Dockers now. Maybe that would be the nice new trend, I guess.
Well, the cult thing is really interesting because I know that I have a fascination with cults. Oddly, I haven't seen almost any of these documentaries that have come out. Like, I know one on Netflix came out that I can't remember the name of.
Wild Wild Country?
Yeah, that sounds right.
It's a bad title. Good documentary.
I mean, yeah, I mean, maybe I'll watch it one day, but I did a video when I worked at BuzzFeed. I produced some videos there, and my most popular video I did was called I Was in a Cult, and I interviewed three former cult members. And this video, check it out. It's got over 3 million views on YouTube. I don't fully understand what it is. Even I have a hard time explaining why I'm so fascinated. I think it's that I wonder if anyone could get me to join a cult. Or sometimes I'm like, why hasn't anyone asked me to join a cult?
And, really?
I feel
okay.
A little left out. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I could ever fall into it necessarily. I think that's part of the interest, though, is that you – and I think the real reason for the interest – and not to make this too political or anything, but I think in the
Let's
political
do it.
Climate,
this is the space to
everybody
do it.
Is like, oh, it's a insane cult, like it has to be. And then you're wondering, like, and you know, if you see a charismatic figure, I'm not going to name names or anything, because I think the instant anybody hears that name, they either shut down emotionally or just are filled with rage. But when you see, you know, you have to be charismatic, but all you have to be able to do is dupe morons or desperately needy people. They might not all be stupid, but they're all looking for something. And that's interesting, but I feel like I'm not – we've talked a little bit before we were recording. We were talking about working for politics or, you know, working in politics, doing any political things. And aside from writing on the Colbert Report, doing political satire, I've done some little things and – shot some videos for Swing Left and worked on some different campaigns at different points, but I never get to such a point where I'm always like, yeah, that's a person who has some good views, and maybe they're, oh, Obama is an inspirational speaker, but I'm never like, I love this man. Like, I just, maybe I'm too egotistical, but I don't think I can love someone else that much. And I don't, you know, my fiance is probably listening to this and wondering what that means about our relationship. Ooh. And that's a separate thing entirely. But, you know, it would be bad if it was a cult follower, cult leader relationship. But I just don't get how anyone could be that blinded. Or, you know, I'm like, oh, I like most Democrats. And, oh, yeah, I dislike, you know, certain other politicians. But people who are so blindly like, oh, I'm a Bernie fan, or like, I'm this or that. Like, I just don't enjoy that sort of, it's beyond celebrity worship. It's actual worship, essentially.
Let me give you a separate example. What about if you, I mean, I have daydream fantasies all the time, and it usually involves me meeting a celebrity. Today, I was on the train, and listeners, I'm wearing one of my Frasier shirts. I have multiples. And I was imagining being on the train and hearing either Kelsey Grammer or David Hyde Pierce say, hey, nice shirt. And then, because I knew I was on the way to see you, and I was like, oh, man, wouldn't it be great if one of them saw me in the shirt? And then I was like, hey, you know what? Guess who I'm about to interview? I guess I would only work with Kelsey.
Yeah.
And then we'd head on over together and surprise you.
This also sounds like if you were a crazy celebrity stalker.
That's true.
Kilt fan, this would be like the, and then my daydream is I bring them to a basement, which is kind of where we're recording this.
Interview
and they're
like, them.
They would never go, yeah, be like, oh, come on my podcast, because they'd be like, I don't know that this woman has a Frasier-themed podcast. It's a
also, I got fully off track even why I even brought this up. I brought it up because I ask you, we were talking about cults. I feel as if there are probably celebrities, not anyone that could get me to join a cult, but like if somebody that I really, really respected was like, if I saw, she's dead, but Bea Arthur is a woman. if I had met her, I would have immediately wept because mm-hmm. I love her so much. But if you saw, like, is there any celebrity, they could be dead, if Bea Arthur, if I saw her on the train, she's a stranger, she's like, hey, come get a couple drinks with me. I was gonna say, yeah. 10 drinks, but come get some drinks with me. I'd say yes. Frank, I'm sorry, but Bea Arthur is here. She's dead, and she just asked me to go get a martini with her.
Here's the thing. If Bea Arthur showed up in 2019 and said, join my cult, I'd be like, you've come back from the dead. You must be, it would be the second coming. Yeah, you're the Messiah, is Bea Arthur.
Yeah.
I would be into that, I think. I thought she would invite you over for some cheesecake, and that would be like a Golden Girls-themed cult called, like, Golden Humanity.
Yeah,
and then I would probably join that. Well, I would say, you know, it worked for that Smallville actress. It was in that insane upstate cult.
I tried to follow up. I read some things, and it's not good.
Yeah, no. Well, one of the other heiresses who was in the cult was then working at this, like, vegan juice bar, like, three blocks from where I get coffee in the East Village. That was, like, in the New York Post. I was pitching a show with a friend about cults, a sitcom thing. But I think everybody's doing that again. It's in the zeitgeist, essentially. One other side thing, though. Speaking of David Hyde Pierce,
yes,
and Kelsey Grammer. And, yes, I've only actually met and worked with Kelsey, and he's a wonderful person and was a lot of fun to work with, and did a bunch of was just like, so it was fun with any, it's weird when you're working with any real professional actor,
right?
And they just read the line and you're like, oh, yep, you got it. And every once in a while I'd be like, oh, could you do this, and because I'm recording them, sure. And sort of directing them, and then when I'm playing it back I'm like, no, he kind of nailed it the first time. But I was at one of my favorite coffee shops in the East Village, and was sitting there. And this was, I had already written the show, and we had recorded, and Kelsey had recorded some of the initial lines, and we'd done a little teaser, and we had pitched it, and it was sort of in a dormant phase, I'd call it that. And it's a show about the supernatural, so it was dead, but it came back to life, is sort of how I've been viewing it in my own head. But at the time, I thought, well, maybe we're not doing anything with it. Mm-hmm. And I looked up, and I was sitting by where the milk and all the sugar and creamer and everything is, and David Hyde Pierce was there, and he was pouring, you know, milk or something in his... I didn't really look at exactly what it was. I don't want any listeners to be like, he is a vegan, he doesn't drink milk, this story is made up. You have a liar on your show, Anita.
He drinks liquids.
He does drink liquids, yes.
A liquid.
And maybe he was putting sugar in it. And I was like, oh, whoa. But I wasn't going to say anything. And if the show had been going on, and honestly, if we do more of it, which I really, really hope to do more of it,
yeah.
I would love to have David Hyde Pierce on. I don't think we would do the sibling thing. But if you think back to Dracula, there were several people who in Bram Stoker's Dracula were hunting Dracula. There was Arthur Holmwood, I think, is the... I think that was the name of the British lord, because they were all according. This is.
I'm never going to fact check this. I'm just like.
If you want to do a Bram Stoker podcast, I would love to be a guest on that as well.
I'll let you know if that happens.
But the other interesting thing was Kelsey Grammer had talked about. Oh, he had read Dracula years ago and everything, and so enjoyed that sort of fact. I think he read the script, and I didn't specifically call out like nobody's going to see John Seward. You mean the John Seward from Bram Stoker's Dracula? So nobody really gets that. That's maybe a thing for really a really deep cut. But I think Kelsey appreciated when I mentioned that. He was like, oh, that was sort of interesting.
Sure.
But I would, you know, otherwise, if there's a reason to say something to somebody, maybe you could say that. But if I see David Hyde Pierce again, I will tell him about the podcast.
I mean, I will say that I'm not a person who bothers celebrities. However, I would like to think, I think that if I saw either one of them, I think I have something to contribute, which is that I have this podcast. Now, could it scare them away? Sure it could. And I think the number one thing that I've learned is that it doesn't help to start the conversation by saying, I'm not crazy. So I wouldn't do that.
Right. You have to start by talking about Saint Elsewhere.
Right, exactly, yes.
But that might be a weird, like, yeah. Oh my God, celebrity who I really like, You're of an age. Have you ever watched Saint Elsewhere? I never watched that. I would. I'd go to my aunt's, and in syndication, I would watch Taxi, which was
sure.
a really good show.
Heard of it?
Yeah. If you watch it, it's pretty solid. Danny DeVito's first big thing.
I learned a lot about it because I went to see. There's now or what at the time, like a few months ago. There were new episodes of Inside the Actor Studio being taped, and they were having a series of people host, not James Lipton, and one of those people was Kelsey Grammer. So I went with my friend who went to the New School or Pace because they get first dibs on these tapings. So he interviewed James. Oh my God. James
Burroughs,
like,
one of the creators.
It was James
Burroughs, yeah.
And they talked about Taxi at length, and Frasier, and Friends, and Will and
Grace. Because I feel like
directed.
That's what I was going to say. I thought some of the creators of Taxi went on to create Cheers.
Yes.
And then obviously the Frasier spinoff from all of that. Yeah. Oh, Kelsey would be an amazing host of Inside the Actor's Studio because
he
has that voice.
He was great.
The whole voice, like that's what's so incredible about. I think all of his performances, and I think it's, you know, I mean, it's not how he speaks in real life, but he was born in like the Bahamas, I think. So I think he has a literal mid-Atlantic accent.
Yeah.
That whole like Cary Grant,
it's
like, no, he has the accent you have growing up in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean.
I mean, I think that's what's so great. Like I was, you know, I tend to just rewatch the same shows over and over because I don't like to... I feel like new shows for me, especially because you can binge watch them now, they're like drugs in that, like, I'll give you an example. I've been watching Fear the Walking Dead, and it is very difficult for me to take a show I've never seen and just watch one episode and move on with my life. So then I end up staying up till 1 o'clock in the morning watching this show about zombies. As opposed to like Seinfeld, I'm like, I know this episode in and out. I can go on with my life. I can half listening to it. But I will say there's one crossover thing that I think about with George Costanza and Frasier Crane, who are both very iconic characters, is that they both don't sound the same in real life. But even the way they speak on both shows, George with his New York accent and Frasier's mid-Atlantic, transatlantic accent, it's just one specific thing that sounds different, which for me is just the way he like says the letter R. Like, he just talks like a normal person in real life, and it's always very jarring.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like with Frasier, he'd be like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a word now, but I feel like everything sounds just slightly British.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's Frasier.
By the way, I want to go back and re-record and say transatlantic, because I think I kept saying mid-Atlantic,
which is
just like a Philly, Delaware accent, but the transatlantic accent.
The transatlantic. So mid-Atlantic is like Wisconsin?
No, I think that's Midwestern.
Oops. Okay.
Mid-Atlantic would be, I think, like the Eastern Seaboard, essentially. Oh. Like maybe, I don't know. I don't know. I'm from Ohio. I don't know. Mid-Atlantic stuff.
It's amazing how many words I say without knowing what they mean. Like I say transatlantic because I looked it up. And that's how I learned about transatlantic. But yeah. I'm like, I don't know what transatlantic means.
Yeah.
Something about the Atlantic Ocean.
Well, that's the thing. That's, I think, what I learned the most from watching Frasier was my love of saying big words that make me sound sophisticated and smart, but that I don't always want. Actually, that's actually not the case. The worst thing is from having studied vocabulary in high school in preparation for, you know, we in English class, we would have to learn different vocabulary words. And then at some point, as your brain gets older and works less and less, I'm just going to say good, less well, less goodly. You end up at points you're like, oh, I want to say that somebody was very talkative, but my brain can't think of the simple word talkative. And you're like, quite loquacious. Ooh. And then you're like, why did I? But it's like, oh, no, I'm actually dumb. I couldn't think of like the simpler word because age related.
But that's a good cover up.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you seem very sophisticated. But one thing I do want to go on the with Kelsey's character.
Yes.
He's a Victorian gentleman who was a vampire. So, of course, he's speaking in a little more of an old-fashioned way. And it also was, I was very impressed that, oh, Kelsey pronounced everything exactly right off the bat, even if there was like a sort of fake French word, not fake, but like a French word to make it seem even more impressive. And so that was sort of a nice fun. I'm like, oh, it was also intimidating. So intimidating to sit there and be directing or recording Kelsey Grammer, who is not only Fraser Crane, but Sideshow Bob, who has done one of the funniest animated characters, I think, on The Simpsons. And if it's one of the funniest characters on The Simpsons, it's one of the funniest animated characters ever. But the Cape Fear episode of The Simpsons, which I had never even seen, or I think at the time I watched it, which again was probably around this time, middle school. Oh, so that was the thing. I think I was a big Simpsons fan. That was probably the first adult show that I sort of watched and then sort of moved into adult actual live action shows like Seinfeld, Frasier, Friends, and all of those things. But that particular episode, that character was so hilariously funny to me, I think. There's just something about, but I think it wasn't, I did listen to the John Hodgman podcast that you had there. And I think there was something that I did respond to with what you were both talking about there, where I think if you are, and I can, you know, if you're a pretentious middle schooler, well, you know, that was when I was most pretentious, I think, when I was like, I'm intellectual. Yeah. Really, and then I was very serious and not evil, but I just was like a nerd and I had a lot of.
I'm not saying you were mean. I'm saying I didn't do a lot in middle school. Like I didn't do a lot of after school activities. There is overlap, by the way. There will be a future episode. I've done a spreadsheet and asked multiple Frasier fans what we all have in common. And I'm sure it would not surprise you to know a lot of us were indoor kids. Some of us were bullied. In my case, I definitely, one of my favorite things to do was watch reruns of Frasier and eat my favorite snack, which was various deli meats rolled up. And I would put like cheese in them. So it was like a meat taco. That sounds disgusting.
No, that's like, but very really paleo. Good. That seems like very, so you were like ahead of the time.
Thank you.
You were very mature. Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to give, you're telling me the kind of middle schooler you were, but I would say there is some overlap, but continue.
Oh, okay. Well, no, and I think I did some extracurriculars, but I didn't really play sports or anything particularly. Right. I have no siblings, so, you know.
Oh, me neither. Really? Only child club.
Is that a common thing for Frasier
fans,
actually?
There have been some, yes. There has been overlap. I don't want to give anything away about the results, but I will just say there was definitely more than one only child in the mix, I would say. But yes, I am an only child.
Well, I think that could also be why you would be more interested or seemingly more adult. Like, again, not that I was a very mature 13-year-old. I'm just saying, like, mentally, I thought I was very mature.
Sure.
I was wrong. That's where the pretentious aspect sort of comes in. But I think that was then one of the appeals of watching Frasier was seeing, oh, this isn't someone who's, you know, you're not watching sports or anything. It's not, and, you know, Cheers had everything, but you're not, you know, I wouldn't have identified necessarily with Sam Malone, a former baseball player. Definitely in middle school, not a womanizer. That's not really aware of what to do
I tried
with any of that.
I did try to watch Cheers. I think I know I missed the boat. Like, you know, some of the stuff that I watch, Friends is a great example. Friends is something like I don't think I could get into now. It definitely has not stood the test of time in many ways. But I watch it all the time because I watched the show growing up. So there's this nostalgic element for me. But I have tried to watch Cheers multiple times. I watched the pilot. I recognize it was well written.
Yeah.
But none of the characters for me felt particularly relatable. And Frasier and many of the characters on that show, but probably specifically Niles and Frasier, are these characters that I would think somebody who didn't necessarily blend into school would fit in with, because mm-hmm. they just feel like aliens, or they feel like ghosts from the past and somehow have this like very like, you know, very opposite father who is a cop. And it mm-hmm. just, it's very interesting to me.
Well, I think it was a more natural character relationships and dynamics that you would see right. in Frasier. And I mean, you know, and you would have, oh, even like the caregiver Daphne is there and she becomes yeah. like part of the family. Cheers was always interesting. I was too young to really see it when it was originally on. I think I had watched some of the later episodes and I went back and started watching the first season on Netflix. And again, the pilot is legitimately one of the best written pilots I'd ever seen. Before I saw it, I did read that in Tina Fey's autobiography. She mentions how it's just so well structured. And you watch mm-hmm. it and you're like, oh, okay, I know exactly who these people are, what the main relationship dynamic is going to be, what's going on and everything. But mm-hmm. at the same time, it's a more... it's a slightly less... realistic character interactions. Like you're like, oh, and even as an adult, I've never had a regular bar. I'll go to a few different ones and never have one place that I just go, nobody knows my name there. Now coffee shops, people do know my name. Again, maybe subconsciously this is
Mr.
all due to
Frank.
Watching yeah, people want to call me that, I guess I'm okay with it. But like a coffee shop where you go, you need to do work, that's where I'll write or whatever. Maybe that has something to do with Frasier. I mean, actually, you know, I did when I was in Seattle. I went to that bookstore, the Elliott Bay bookstore, and down to the coffee shop that supposedly at least had inspired the coffee shop that they would always go to, Cafe Nervosa.
Right, right.
But with Cheers, watching it, you're like, oh, it really works well as a sitcom, but I never really saw that level of camaraderie going to a bar. There is something a little sad about it, which I think the show addresses a little bit. It's also like the greatest theme song. That's also the most depressing, saddest sounding theme song to a sitcom that you could ever imagine. I recommend that everybody go and listen. The writers wrote multiple verses. There were alternate lyrics. I'm not sure if they were all recorded, but there are like several other things leading in that's going like, when you're really sad and your job is sucks, then you want to go where everybody knows your name. And you're just like, what? And that was, by the way, I apologize to all the listeners who had to hear my horrible rendition of the Cheers theme song, but it's a very funny theme. It's similar to like the theme song for MASH, which I guess was from the movie, and the lyrics, the title is Suicide is Painless.
Oh God.
And suicide is painless. And I'm not making this up. It sounds like a Weird Al version, except like it's like depressed. It's depressed. Al wrote alternate lyrics to a theme song, and it became "Suicide is Painless."
I'll stick with Frasier, but I have two really important questions for you, which I think combine all of the things we've been talking about. So, I think what's great about an animated show is just the level of freedom you have, as in, you know, you've got talking bats mm-hmm. and mummies, I think, and the girl from the
There's
ring.
There's one mummy.
There's one mummy, and the girl from the ring. So, and I have some examples for you for my question. What kind of shenanigans do you think the cast of Frasier would get into if it was an animated show? So I have, just for inspiration, I do think a supernatural element would work. I think the idea of ghosts haunting Frasier's apartment is doable, and I think it could be really fun. And then I was thinking about Scooby-Doo because at some point during the show, Martin purchases a Winnebago, like one of those big camp things. And there's been more than one episode where the gang gets in the bus or the whatever it's called, the Winnebago, for adventures. But I definitely could see them solving mysteries.
Yeah.
And involving talking animals.
Eddie would be Snoopy. You do like a Snoopy episode that's referencing Not Snoopy. Oh, my God.
Scooby?
That's Scooby. Scooby-Doo. This is the age-related mental decline that I'm not that old.
It's mental decline. That's
I've
right.
I've had a lot of coffee to help
starts
for this.
Early, folks.
But yeah, Scooby-Doo. I think you would do one episode where it was all that. You even got Daphne. Yeah. I mean, I think Daphne... No, wait. Roz would probably be Daphne, and Daphne would be Velma.
Right? I was getting so confused.
That's confusing
because I was
at
thinking
first.
Of Daphne Moon.
That's what I'm saying. Right. Daphne Moon, I think, would be more the Velma character.
Right. Interesting.
And then Frasier would I guess Martin would have to be Fred.
I think they'd be their own versions of characters. And now that I'm thinking everyone could be just slightly heightened. Like Daphne, because she's psychic, that means I could see her being a witch on the show.
Ooh,
I mean, on
yeah.
the animated version.
Well, actually, if I do the witch character, I want to ask Tracy Grandstaff, who is the voice of Daria, to come on to do the witch character. I think that would just
Ooh.
Be an amazing sort of thing. And I had worked with her when she was doing promo stuff at Comedy Central.
Oh, cool.
Very quickly, if Frasier was going to be animated or was going to go off into supernatural elements, either way, this could have been a live action one. I think there would have been a good one where Frasier is trying to debunk a medium or a psychic.
Ooh, okay.
And they go to a seance and he's clearly... aware that he's going to, you know, totally tear apart all of the things. He's going to pull like a James Randi and prove that it's a hoax. And then like a bunch of the medium is speaking to the spirit of his mother, probably, you know, and like
Hester.
And, you know, something and, you know, or some ancestor and like weird things are sort of happening. And then you find out at the end, oh, Martin actually fed some of the info. But then there's some weird twist and, oh, maybe it was all real. Like that would be a great episode.
They could also do like I loved in the final season of Broad City, they did a fully animated episode when Abby and Alana took mushrooms. There are already some things that happened on Frasier that I think would just be great animated. Like there is an episode where Martin accidentally, I believe, eats a pot brownie, and he was really good at being fake stoned.
Yeah.
I was very impressed.
I could have
seen hallucinations.
I think it should be an
animated
episode where Frasier and Niles get like a brand of soup. Super expensive, fancy coffee, the kind that passes through the digestive system of a civet or whatever. There's that the most expensive coffee in the world. Ooh. And they drink it, but it was a bad batch or something. And then they go off into the psychedelic hallucination. And it still all is taking place in the, you know, wherever it was. This would be, I love that you're writing the fan fiction for the older series and everything.
I could write this. I mean, there's, because I'd like to think, you know, do I dream of joining this writing cast? Of course I do. I've had people on this show that I know have been contenders to write for the show, at least one person. So I'll get to live out this fantasy through somebody else. But there is an episode where Frasier has a dream, like a near sex dream, about somebody from the radio station, Gil. And then it ends with Freud coming in and getting into bed with Frasier, and then it ends there. But anyway, I think if he went on a psychedelic trip, Freud would definitely show up.
Yeah.
Animated Frasier... I think it could have a second life. If I would fully approve of the revival being animated, because there's actually it's very interesting. So there's a show, a Canadian show called Trailer Park Boys. Have you ever heard of that show?
I've heard of it. Yeah,
it is so interesting because like I started watching it when it was still just like it. Somehow I was watching episodes of it, even though it's in Canada or the show is Canadian. But then they started doing original episodes with Netflix, and then now they have an animated series on Netflix of Trailer Park Boys, but I believe it's them when they're like kids.
Right. Yeah.
So,
well, I think that would be an interesting way to do it, because then you don't have to. Well, then if you wanted to, the continuing adventures of Frasier Crane, which I think from the stuff I've read, I think the idea that I think Kelsey has sort of talked about is, oh, they want to reinvent the show entirely. They don't want it to just be sort of the same reboots the way other, like just like Frasier was not a continuation of Cheers. I think the third one would see it as like, oh, Frasier was the parent show, but this is sort of a different spinoff. But if they wanted to go the direction where, oh, we're just going back in time, and it's sort of like Star Trek did a weird animated series in, I think, either the late 70s or the 80s, where... Oh, it's the same actor. Man, that might not have even been the same actors, but you can have them still voice all the same characters. But then you have yet another animated show where it's just normal humans in a normal building, so you don't, you know, you're not using the medium of animation as well as you could necessarily.
I'm thinking maybe just go completely off the rails. Like I had a great time when John Hodgman did the live episode. I got to write three different versions of Frasier, but like combined with different shows. And my favorite one I did was kind of like a space version of Frasier. So I there's actually, I should send it to you if you're interested, but they did for some show, like some award show, they did a sketch, the cast of Frasier, but pretending that they were in like on Star Trek. And they were
like
in the ship and they had the outfits on and it was great. But here's a new fresh idea. I feel like I get inspired by every guest I have on here. I'm thinking a young Sheldon, but it's young Frasier and it's in space and it's animated.
Wait, last night I was like, and I literally wrote down, oh, you know what would be interesting is if the spinoff was the young Sheldon version of Frasier. And it, what my thought on that was that you could actually do it as the live action series and the framing device, Kelsey Grammer's still there. I wasn't going to actually necessarily mention it because halfway I'm like, oh, I should pitch this to Tom Russo, Kelsey's producer.
Well, but, you've got proof that you came up with it.
But no, this was going to be, there'd be the framing device and it's Frasier talking about his childhood with his own therapist and saying like, oh, had these issues and, you know, it doesn't have to be serialized, but then it would flash back to Frasier at various points in his, as a kid, as an adolescence, and then a young Martin Crane as a beat cop. And then my joke thing that I was like, but he's tracking a serial killer. We don't do that at all. That would be very funny. That would be the real big twist. So it's Mindhunter, but with Frasier.
I have so many iterations. I had one, I made a fake poster on Twitter somewhere that is essentially like a gritty crime drama that is starring like young Martin Crane. And of course, Hester's in the mix as well, his wife, because they met. I don't know if she was a cop, but I remember on Frasier, he said they met over the chalk outline of a body. So I believe she, I don't know if she was like a forensics, like I think she might have been a psychologist. I don't remember, but I could see some romance blossoming.
Yeah, I think that would be fascinating. That would be a very interesting show. I think it still obviously has to be a comedy. It would be very weird if they did a spinoff or a prequel that was not a comedy, but I would love to see a comedy about like a beat. I mean, it would be almost Brooklyn Nine-Nine crossed with Mindhunter, crossed with Frasier. But the other thing I was thinking when you were talking about the animation, a cool, funny spinoff would be you would still use the framing device. It would start out with like clips from the original series. You'd use the audio, but then it's called Eddie's World. And then the dog runs off and you're seeing all of his adventures in the dog park, doing other things, talking to other people.
Show.
Exactly.
Oh my God. That's really smart. That's the one you should pitch. Eddie's World. I'm so into that. A similar question. In terms of, there are certain people, and I'd say Kelsey Grammer falls into this category, who have really great voices for animation. So dead or alive, who do you think would be somebody who has been underused or hasn't been used? Who would be a good cartoon voice? I have some examples to inspire you, or just because I wanted to write these down. I think Katharine Hepburn would have been great as a talking black hole. Jimmy Stewart as the moon, just a talking moon. And I think Kristen Chenoweth, who's alive and she has like a very cheerful voice, could be a good talking sunflower. I also am obsessed with inanimate objects that talk. I mean, I don't know if that's a real thing, but it's just something I think about. Inanimate objects, what would they sound like? Well, no, that's in Beauty and the Beast. Yeah.
How would you recast Beauty and the Beast?
Oh boy! Man. I mean,
with just the talking objects, though, because they did it in the movie version.
I don't want to lose people here, but like, I have never been a Disney fan, and I think that
oh, really?
Comes from me having a low tolerance for like really sad stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really as even as a child, like those movies bummed me out so hard. Like The Lion King and she's trapped in Beauty and the Beast. Probably my favorite part of Beauty and the Beast was Angela Lansbury as that teacup. Wasn't she a teacup?
Yeah.
Yeah,
she's
quite good. I liked her.
Ooh, you know, another really good pilot that I weirdly was watching recently, Murder, She Wrote. A solid pilot.
I'm going to get into Murder, She Wrote next.
Okay.
Do
they have any podcast called Murder, She Podcasted? Or is that the idea of the reboot of Murder, She Wrote?
Let's see what happens when you
type. It's got to be.
Murder,
I haven't Googled it.
I'm doing it right now. Murder, She Podcast. There's one called Murder She Podcast, and then it's the first Murder She Wrote podcast.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay.
Sorry.
I just wanted it to be the reboot of Murder She Wrote, essentially. Gotcha. But I think that could also be, I'm sure, were there any murder mystery episodes of Frasier?
Yes. One okay. Of, there was a, well, it was a murder, there was a ham radio, which was Frasier got everyone from the radio station to do a like radio mystery show, which of course goes wrong, and it's very funny, if you couldn't guess. And then separately, there's an episode where they play a murder mystery game, and somebody dies in real life.
Okay.
It's funny,
okay.
though. It's not yeah, dark. Yeah. It's funny.
No, that's what I was sort of thinking, yeah. that there'd be something where they'd go to do a weekend of a murder mystery type thing.
Yeah, yeah,
would
yeah.
be delight. And then Martin's the detective, so
of course.
You'd want to sort of see that.
Right. But back to my question. Is yes. there anyone that you can think of, dead or alive, or even just people that you're like, I'd love to have in the future for
oh,
my new
definitely.
Show?
Oh, definitely. Well, I would love to have Gilbert Gottfried.
Ooh.
I think he has such an amazing voice.
Yeah.
But would love to have him. With Richard Kind has a very good voice, who was Ira from Mad About You.
Oh,
I'll save that for
my.
The Mad About You podcast called, like...
I love talking about Mad About You.
Pod About You.
Tell me why. great song. I like to sing it when I'm in mm-hmm. the mood from time to time. But Richard Kind is great.
Yeah.
He was on, I liked him on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah,
he plays
yeah.
Larry's cousin.
Oh, Larry David should probably voice an animated character.
Yeah.
It would be amazing.
Oh, absolutely.
The fun thing, the thing that was so wonderful about doing You're Not a Monster was I was actually able to get a lot of really great voice actors to do it, like Aparna Nancharla. Has an amazing voice. She's
Absolutely.
And she's so funny and
I
just
love
a
her.
Delightful person
yeah.
just in general, and was just great working with her. And Patton Oswalt was doing a voice, Amy Sedaris.
Ellie Kemper,
yeah. Oh, and she's great. She's mm-hmm. actually playing one. Well, I don't want to give a twist away.
Mm.
Second season, there might be some sort of twist, but she Ooh. Is just another human therapist.
Okay.
There is another twist at the end of the first season.
Oh my
this
God.
Is going to sound really great to people who are like, I've not seen any of it, but you should all check it out. It's on. It's
when,
at IMDb.
When does it premiere? Or is that?
We'll have to try. We don't first know. Or second week of October.
First
I can,
or second week of October.
I can update. I'll send you an audio file of when we have the exact date. It partially is dependent on some sponsorship stuff.
Sure. Sometime in October.
In October.
All right.
And actually, I would say another person who had a great voice was Amber Ruffin, who appears on Seth Meyers.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's voicing a mermaid character and a gremlin
oh, cool.
in the show. And I mean, just so. And actually, Langston Kerman, who's another up and coming stand up
yeah.
comic. Did this actually, I was having him voice one or two characters, and one of the characters was the dentist who's in the office next door. We don't really get into it here, but he starts to get suspicious of all of these weird patients that keep going into the therapist's office. And at one point, he's possessed by a demon, and I was going to try to get someone else to do the demon voice. And Langston was like, oh, I like have something. And I'm like, okay, yeah, we can record it. And he did like one of the lines, and I'm like, okay, we're just going to record you as the demon. It's such a good demon voice, and that's hard to do. I was trying to do it.
I can't do it. Demon
it's
voice.
Like it hurts your throat.
Yeah.
It's really difficult. So it was already, and Joel Kim Booster, Adam Pally is
I
just a
Adam
really
Pally.
Funny like performer, and his voice works so well in animation. So already I'm like, oh, this was a delightful thing. We got to work with all these really great talented people. Peter Gross, who I had worked with on the Colbert Report, and mm-hmm. he's one of the Sonic guys. He's been in a bunch of movies and TV things. He's did a bunch of really great voices, like Freddy Krueger, Hannibal Lecter. I had emailed him to ask him to do it, and I was like, will you be my Harry Shearer?
Ooh.
And he was like, yes, I would love to.
Nice.
And actually, Harry Shearer, I would love to have Harry. I don't.
He'd be great.
I think the Simpsons people maybe contractually are not able to do other animated voices. But Harry Shearer was the voice of TV Land. For a two or three, at least a year or two, where they have somebody who's doing all the vocal stuff. We're like, up next, the Brady Bunch. It's the one where Marsha gets her face hit by a football or something. I never really watched the Brady Bunch. It was too saccharine and popular. But my first job in New York was as a PA at TV Land. And I got to write some of the promos. That was sort of what I ended up sort of doing. And mm-hmm. you know, we have Harry Shearer doing it, so I'm like, well, let me give him some voices to do. So it was some weird, dumb Christmas theme. They were showing all the holiday episodes, and it was like, I think I called it the Shows of Christmas Past, and then he was supposed to voice Jacob Marley's ghost. It was way too many levels deep for, like, a commercial on Nick at Night or TV Land telling you what to watch next. But I think Harry Shearer enjoyed that, oh, I get to do an actual voice. So he's, ooh, I'm a ghost. Oh, don't make the same mistakes I made. And I'm like, this is great. I think he just liked that my name was Frank Lesser because there's the composer named Frank Lesser who wrote Baby, It's Cold Outside.
Oh,
not my fault.
You didn't do that.
No, exactly.
That's good. Just be defensive about it. I would be.
Exactly.
Okay, so those are all the... Okay, so you would love to have Harry Shearer.
Yeah.
You know who is great? And I'll plug an old web series that I did that was called Questionable Drawings. It was a My Damn Channel, which is like a comedy channel that I worked for a long time ago. But I did a series where I would quote-unquote animate using a whiteboard, and I would either do stop motion or speed it up, and I would ask comedians weird questions. So I had... one of my favorites was Josh Rubin. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Okay.
Josh Rubin, he's like a director and an actor, and he did some of the best imitations I've ever heard. He does a really good Philip Seymour Hoffman, which, by the way, I got him to do before he passed away. But nevertheless, he does a good John Mayer, too. But anyway, yeah, I feel like it's very exciting because you've got this animated show. You could really have – the sky's the limit.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, I also want to mention Milana Vayntrub did a voice, which was – really great. She's been on a couple different things. She was the AT&T spokesperson for a while. No, let me see. I mean, and I'm friends with other comics that there are a bunch of people. I have a ton of people that I would love to work with.
How about
with any voices?
How about a dead person?
Dead person.
Who's like a dream.
Well, Vincent Price would have been ideal.
Yeah.
Somebody doing, or even just doing a Vincent Price impression. I think Gilbert Gottfried could do a great Humphrey Bogart.
Ooh, okay.
But maybe it's also just like a visual resemblance. At one point years ago, I was like, I wanted to do like a Casablanca film, but with Gilbert Gottfried in the Humphrey Bogart role, and would set it in like Iraq or Afghanistan, and nobody would watch this necessarily.
You like to add a nice dark twist.
Exactly. Well, it would be like a modern day version of it. And Christopher Walken would be amazing. I would think Christopher Walken would be a good Moon voice. But then there are certain people that their voices are sort of so iconic that so many people do the impressions of them. So you don't necessarily...
You don't need them.
Yeah. Or Clint Eastwood is another person who was very popular to do impressions of.
All right. Yeah, you don't need him for this. You could get somebody to do it. Or you probably know somebody that can do a Jimmy Stewart impression. Or maybe that's just my dream. Is there anything you wanted... I was going to throw to you if you want to plug... So I
probably was already doing it filtered in throughout, but I think I was also partially inspired to write the show, to come up with the You're Not a Monster show. Like I had written a collection of short humor called Sad Monsters, growling on the outside, crying on the inside. That was about all of just a bunch of different monsters who were sad and what their issues were and everything. And I had a little preface that said there was a vampire Sigmund Freud was writing. And there was a little quote from him that sometimes a steak is just a steak, essentially. And so this show isn't directly based on that or anything, but I was sort of more me assessing like, well, how should I have written that, essentially? And I was like, it would be better if there's a human therapist who's doing all these things. And I think subconsciously, again, I was heavily influenced by Frasier. And when you think any shows that are... about therapy, and I had watched it as a kid. I only was really re-watching a lot of it after I'd already written everything, and I'm like, that's kind of similar to this scene where John flies in as a bat and kicks out his great-great-grandson's patient because his problems are bigger. And then I'm watching an episode of Frasier where I'm like, Frasier runs into Niles's practice and kicks out the patient. And I'm like, I probably saw that as a kid and subconsciously was reusing that. But when I wrote it, I had a different idea that I was actually working on that I had Kelsey Grammer in mind for. Wrote this script thinking it was going to be live action and sent it to my manager. And he just, I was just like, hey, what are your thoughts? And I thought it was a rough draft. And he's like, I sent this to Kelsey Grammer's people. What do you think about Kelsey as John? And I'm like, that would be perfect. But, I thought it was, I don't think he was going to put on vampire makeup. And then my manager's like, I mean, it's animated, right? And I'm like... Yeah, it probably makes more sense as that. And actually now with what we do in the shadows, you wouldn't want to have another live action sort of monster thing necessarily. And that I haven't seen the series yet, but the movie is hilarious. I absolutely love that movie.
I did see the movie. Now, you've really taught me something important here, which is I don't know how anything works. I was picturing you like in a detective show with photos and headshots of people that you love and being like, all right, now who am I going to get to play this bat? Let's, Kelsey Grammer. Yes, let me just develop this photo and put it up on the wall. I had no idea that it didn't work.
No. And just so you know, he's usually a vampire. He's usually in his vampire. He occasionally turns into the bat.
Oh, okay.
At different points.
Thank you for clarifying.
Exactly. If people want, and he doesn't look, actually, he's one of the producers of the show. He very specifically had said he didn't want the character to look too much like himself, to mm-hmm. look too much like Frasier or Sideshow Bob. I think what he had said he liked about Sideshow Bob was that, it doesn't look like him. It's not really modeled on him or anything. And actually, when he had first read the script, his producer, Tom Russo, had told me that, he really liked the script, but he was initially a little hesitant because, you know, he was like, well, I don't know if I want to play another, you know, therapist again. Mm-hmm. And then his producer was like, no, he's retired. And then he was like, I'm okay with that. But I'm also like, and he's a vampire. That to me would be the bigger difference between this character and Frasier, unless this is Kelsey admitting that part of Frasier's secret backstory is he's a vampire. This could be breaking news for the I'm Listening podcast right now.
I agree. There's another premise. Now he's immortal. we come flash forward. We find, or maybe it's a, how did, what is Frasier now? He's immortal because he was turned into a vampire in the last, however long the show has been off the air.
Exactly. I think you can go anywhere that you want sort of with it, but you would want to see all the other characters in it. Yeah. You want to know what ends up happening with Roz and Niles and all of those.
And I just want to say, I do not feel that this is typecasting at all. I know that, I mean, Kelsey, if you're listening, which I'm sure you are to my podcast and have been the entire time, to me, it's more of like, I think this is a character that is really perfect for him to play, because for me, when I think of Kelsey Grammer, even when he plays himself on 30 Rock, there's just like, the fact that he has this like classical acting background training is something he brings to all of his roles. And so I think that's perfect for this character.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thanks. And that's the thing. And he is a Victorian gentleman. It has that sort of old fashioned thing, but also like, you know, in the Victoria, your views on dating would be completely different. So he's coming to terms with, what do people in the 21st century, how do they view everything? And it's just so perfect for all of that. Oh, and one thing I will say, so I am on Twitter.
Oh, perfect.
I tweet occasionally. I had initially started it because I was like, I'll promote my book. So my Twitter name is Sad Monsters. And I think about a month before my book came out in 2011, I'm like, I'll get on Twitter and I'll have like 5,000 followers in like, you know, a couple weeks. And a couple weeks passed and I had maybe 200 or 300. But slowly over the last 8 years, I'm up a little bit more. But unfortunately, I have too many. And I write jokes, but I force myself at least generally once a day. But a lot of them are just political because it's all you can think about. Or they're about Batman.
Everyone should follow you, especially if they want to know when the show is coming out.
Exactly. Yeah, I will definitely be posting about the show a little bit. Well, and one thing that I've found interesting, I would occasionally try to write jokes. I don't think I love just writing jokes for the sake of there being a joke. I prefer if it is tied to a bigger story or a character or something. So it's an interesting thing, but a lot of comedy. I would rather with my spare time, I joined Twitter so I could let people know about the things that I'm doing, like, I'm writing this thing, and then you spend so much time on Twitter, you're not doing those other things that you wanted to be able to tell people about. So, but yeah, thanks for following me.
Frank, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Really looking forward to your new show, and follow Frank on Twitter. Until next time, good night, Seattle.
Tune in for a new episode of I'm Listening on October 29th, where my guest will be Jesse McLaren, aka McJesse on Twitter.